Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the presentation of our trading update for the first quarter of 2014. I will ask in a minute Philippe Plateau to comment on the performance and the key developments in each business group, and then I will comment on the outlook for the full year, which was released this morning. Let's start with a review of the performance of the business groups. Philippe, would you please go ahead?
Thank you, Marc, and good afternoon, everybody. Our revenues in the first quarter were up 1% year-on-year. Continuing the evolution of end of last year, this is the combination of two distinct and opposite trends. On the one hand, we have seen positive developments in the majority of our product businesses. Here, the cautious improvement in the European economy and growth in most other regions, with the exception of South America, has seen customer activity levels increase. On the other hand, our recycling revenues decreased, primarily as a result of substantially lower metal prices year-on-year, but also due to lower volumes in our precious metals refining activity. We also felt currency headwinds in a number of our businesses as the euro strengthened against the currencies of several countries where we're active. Thanks to our solid free cash flows in the quarter, we were able to further reduce our net debt, while at the same time continuing our share buyback program, and we currently hold just over 9% of our shares in treasury. In terms of our growth projects, a number of initiatives have moved from development phase into production in recent months, while some other projects scheduled to come on stream later this year. Let me now comment on the main developments in each of our business groups, and we start with Catalysis. Revenues in Catalysis were up by 4% year-on-year. In automotive catalysts, revenues developed pretty much in line with the automotive market, both globally and regionally. In Europe, our revenues increased on the back of the market recovery, although not quite at the same pace, as our current platform mix offers a slightly and temporary lower exposure to diesel. In China, we continue to do very well, and our presence on some of the best-selling global OEM platforms, including those of Japanese manufacturers, is clearly a factor here. We are steadily winning business with Japanese OEMs around the world, benefiting from our more targeted approach through our Umicore Shokubai joint venture. In North America, our revenues continue to grow in line with car production, while the only real negative evolution has come in South America, where there was contraction in the Brazilian automotive sector. With regards to our progress in HED, we are progressing very much according to our plan. The two lines in France are steadily ramping up, while the new facility in China was opened about a month ago. HED volumes are growing, but as we mentioned before, we are only likely to feel the full benefits as we move into the second half of this year. The revenues of Precious Metals Chemistry, the smaller BU, were down, reflecting lower demand from precursors, mainly in the Brazilian automotive sector. Moving to Energy Materials. In Energy Materials, revenues were up by 26%, with all of the business units recording strong growth. This was particularly the case for rechargeable battery materials, where demand for the high energy density lithium cobaltite cathodes used in high-end portable electronics continued to surge ahead. This has been driven by continuing growth in tablet and smartphone sales, which in turn have been boosted by developments like the introduction of the 4G networks. Greater connection speed and functionalities obviously require an even better performance from the battery and its enabling materials that we provide. On the automotive side, the demand remained rather erratic. However, the trends indicate continuing growth in the sector, with the technology choices of the automotive producers favoring NMC-based battery systems for the majority of the future platforms. In Cobalt and Specialty Materials, we also saw strong growth, mainly as a result of higher sales of catalysts and chemicals used in industries like, for example, tire production. We also completed the upgrade of our nickel production capabilities in Belgium, and this is now fully up and running. In electro-optic materials, we saw a positive development with strong demand in the finished optics business and good demand for substrates used in space applications. And we even started to see some improvement in the concentrated PV industry. In film products, we saw higher demand for rotary ITO targets driven by higher demand in the display sector. Performance materials. Performance materials revenues were down by 1%, although it's worth pointing out that the overall margin picture was much more positive as we started to see the effects of the recent cost reduction measures that we've taken. The zinc-related businesses performed best. Building products started to feel the benefits of a cautious improvement in the European construction sector, helped also by a mild winter in the first quarter, especially compared to last year's harsh weather. Zinc chemicals benefited from an increase in sales of zinc powders for use in chemical and battery applications. In the other business units, revenues in platinum engineered materials were stable, while in technical materials and electroplating, product sales were somewhat lower due to a reduced level of demand in Asia. The Element 6 abrasives activities joint venture saw an improvement in demand, notably in the higher end applications like for oil and gas. Finally, in recycling, revenues were down 16% year on year, mainly due to the impact of lower received metal prices. And this was the case for all three of the main business units within this division. As you know, it's not just the precious metals that play a role here, but also a broad range of specialty metals. If we look at precious metal refining, on top of the obvious metal price impact, we also process lower volumes of material at our Hoboken plant. We have been conducting a number of engineering adaptations and tests in recent weeks ahead of the planned investment. The net result has been a reduced capacity to treat material in installations other than the smelter. This volume trend may persist throughout the year as additional modifications and tests will be carried out in several parts of the flow sheet. This is in addition to the planned maintenance shutdown that we will undertake in the second half of the year, which will accommodate the first phase of the expansion investment work. From a mix perspective, the picture was also somewhat less supportive than last year. There was a temporary reduced availability of PGM-rich material in industrial residue streams, and also as a result of the somewhat lower availability of high-end electronic scrap. The Hoboken expansion investment is scheduled to get underway in the second half of this year, and this remains subject to us receiving the necessary operating permits, as you know. And in the other recycling business units, revenues were also down. In jewelry and industrial metals, the lower metal prices offset the improved level of deliveries of products for industrial applications, while in precious metals management, the overall trading conditions were also less supportive than last year. Mark, and I'll hand it over back to you for the outlook statement.
Thank you, Philip. And if we take the outlook, if we approach the outlook business by business, we can see that as we anticipated and communicated earlier this year, things are looking more positive in the product-related businesses. In catalysis, for instance, we are set to see growth that is more or less in line with that of the automotive sector, and this should be complemented in the second half of the year as we start to feel more of the benefits from the new business in Euro 6 light and heavy-duty diesel applications. In energy materials, we expect good continued revenue growth, with the main driver continuing to be the sales of rechargeable battery materials. On top of that, we're seeing the positive margin impact of the various cost reduction measures starting to be felt more significantly this year. In performance materials, Although we aren't yet seeing revenue improvements in all businesses, the margin improvements are noticeable, in particular in the zinc-related units. In contrast to the above developments, we expect lower profits in the recycling activities, and this will more than offset the improvements elsewhere. As we have mentioned, this is primarily due to lower received precious and specialty metal prices year on year. On top of this effect, we will also feel the impact of lower volumes being processed this year compared to last year, as well as the effects of the less favorable mix due to the somewhat lower availability of certain PGM-rich feeds. Talking about volumes, and in particular the volumes that we process in Hoboken, as Philippe alluded to, we are conducting a number of, and have been conducting and continue to be conducting, engineering work and tests in preparation for the expansion investment that should get underway in the summer months. And it is fair to say that it has now appeared that we had underestimated the downtime that such preparatory work would cause and the impact that it has on the available capacity to treat the existing supply streams. So all in all, we currently foresee our full recurring EBIT for this year to be somewhere between 250 and 280 million euros, assuming that the current market conditions persist throughout the year. With this, I would now like to open the line to questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1. We are taking a question from Mutlu Gundogan from ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. It's Mutlu Gundogan again at ABN AMRO. I have two questions on recycling and one on catalysis. The first on recycling is actually on 2015, when you talk about more extensive work that will take place then. Can you share with us what you mean with that? Does it mean that you expect a longer maintenance shutdown in 2015 compared to 2014, or will we see more engineering work which is currently weighing on the volumes, or is it something else? So that's the first question. The second question is on the mix. You're saying that the supply mix has deteriorated due to the low availability of PGM-rich materials. Can you tell us how the underlying mix has evolved in this quarter, if you correct for the strike, if you see the strike as a one-off? So that's the second question. And then thirdly, on catalysis, you talk about the temporarily less favorable platform mix in Europe. Can you share with us what is happening there and why you believe this is temporary? Thank you.
So, Mutlu, let me start with the recycling questions. I think it's too early to give a view about the maintenance work or the maintenance shutdown time required in 2015 compared to this year. Suffice to say that we are trying to front-load the work, the engineering and testing work, such that the ramping up of the expanded capacity would be as smooth as possible. So clearly, front loading in 2014. So today, I'm not in a position to say whether there will be any spillover effect into 2015. I think it's really premature, but really the approach is to front load and do as much preparatory engineering testing work now, such that we could avoid that in the future. Regarding the mix, you're right to say that part of the equation is a temporary effect due to the situation in South Africa. That has both a direct effect on the availability on certain residue streams from the PGM mining and smelting companies down there. And it also has an indirect effect, which makes it difficult to isolate, to single it out, and to quantify that. And the indirect effect is that basically, because of the reduced availability to the market participants of some of the residue streams, the competition for the other materials, PGM-containing materials, has become fiercer, and that has deteriorated the market conditions. So it's a combination of two factors that that hopefully are of a temporary nature indeed, which makes it difficult to quantify the effect. But I would expect that this is a significant part of the mix deterioration that we refer to. In catalysis, the platform mix tends to change from one period to the other, and in this case it's of a temporary nature because it's simply related to an engine change, not a supplier change, but an engine change at one customer, and we know that at one large customer, and we know basically the duration of that negative effect, which is less than a year in total.
Okay, thank you, Mark, for your answers. Just one question, getting back to the first question. Can you just say then, I know you don't want to elaborate on that and it's too early, but you do state in the press release that, you talk about more extensive work. Can you then at least say what that means?
You're talking about Hoboken.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's a very complex flow sheet that involves a number of processes and facilities, combination of pyro metallurgy and hydrometallurgy. And so there are a number of tests that are being carried out in a number of these facilities, and we're not talking of the ISA smelter, we're talking about all the rest of the flow sheet. The tests that are being carried out in these various parts of the flow sheet require a certain amount of downtime, this has, I would say, accumulated to an extent that is more extensive than we had anticipated, in a way. But there is nothing, I would say, abnormal to the fact that we do extensive engineering and preparatory work ahead of such a big investment. It's, a $100 million investment is not something that we have done every month in Hoboken. So that's something that happens once in a decade, or not even. And so there is quite a lot of work that is required in order to be able to successfully implement the investment program. But there is nothing abnormal. It is just more. It is just causing more downtime than we had anticipated because of the complexity.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We are now moving to Philip Depot from ING. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Philip Depot from ING. Two questions on catalysis and one on cash flow. The first one on catalysis is the guidance for growth in line with the market, and I assume this is guidance for 2014. But I wonder if that is what you're also targeting in the medium term, because historically, automotive catalysis has been growing above of the market. So I wonder if you could comment on that, what your growth targets are in the medium term. Second question on catalysis is on the first page of the press release states that margins are improving in all segments which are product related, but the margins in catalysis were quite different from the first half in 2013 compared to the second half. And I wonder if to what margin are you referring when it comes to catalysis? And then the question on cash flow. Well, you state that cash flow was as strong as last year, even if most likely your EBITDA is a bit lower and you have spent quite some money on share buybacks. So I was wondering if you could elaborate a bit on the cash flow evolution in terms of working capital and CapEx in the first quarter. Those were the questions.
Thank you, Philip. First of all, the growth is in line indeed with the market, with the car production globally. You're right in saying that historically, over time, the catalyst industry has outpaced the car production growth because of the strengthening of emission norms. And this, in my mind, will continue to be the case. And you should, however, look at longer periods of time than a quarter in order to make the assessment. So the picture, in my mind, is unchanged. But as I've probably mentioned on the previous occasions and relative to different questions, I would not extrapolate based on quarterly figures. Because you have all kinds of other elements that may interfere, like, for instance, in this case, of precious metals chemistry was down and is somewhat outweighing the improvements or the growth in automotive catalyst. You have platform effects that I commented on earlier, etc. So I would recommend to look at that over a longer period of time than a quarter. And then to answer your second question before I hand over to Philip to address the cash flow question, I would say that the margin improvement that we are commenting about in the press release is really a quarter-on-quarter improvement. All the comparisons that are being made in the press release, unless explicitly stated otherwise, are whether it's revenue or margin, are comparisons versus Q1 2013.
Okay, thank you. But the outlook for catalysis, as mentioned on page 6 of the presentation, for the growth in line with the market is for the full year.
Yeah. That's what I call a short period of time.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because as I mentioned also in when I addressed the previous questions, there are some platform and mix effects that may distort the picture in the relatively short term, and in this case, 1 year is too short term. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I will hand over to Philip to address your question regarding cash flow.
Yeah. So on the cash flow, I mean, you're right that obviously there has been an impact on the operating cash flow, on the EBITDA, although we obviously, as you know, in the first quarter we don't specify on that, but suffice to say that it was still strong. Second element is that, and again, that's the only positive effect that we have from lower metal prices, is that in terms of working capital, obviously that helps us. I mean, lower metal prices mean that we have lower working capital needs. We also try continuously to optimize those. Now, I mean, let's say that in the first quarter, even though on the product business side we have seen strong growth in the number of units, and I would say in general, that we haven't seen yet a substantial increase in working capital needs for those units. So that still may come. I mean, there may be some delay effect, but overall, working capital was helped by low metal prices. And the last element was on CapEx, where we, I would say, had a relatively slow start to the year in terms of CapEx expenditure. You know that for the full year this year, we aim for a lower CapEx than last year, and certainly we've seen it in the first quarter, although obviously timing of CapEx project is not linear over the year, certainly not this year.
Okay, thank you very much for the answers.
The next question comes from Evgenia Molotova from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hello, thanks a lot for taking my questions. I actually also had three. The first one was on ecological permits for the capacity expansion. With the full year results, you said that you expect to get them in the early, in Q2, basically in the first half of Q2. So I wanted to know how are you progressing there. The second question, again, I'm sorry, on catalysis. You said, as far as I understand, this change in the mix in diesel, you lost this contract to Johnson Matthey, and I was just wondering what gives you the confidence that after 1 year you will get this business back. The last question on the metal mix, the fact that base metal smelting volumes are going down at the moment because of lower demand from China, does it affect the availability of residues for you? Thank you.
So let me start with the an update on the permit to say that the process follows its course, its normal course, and I still expect indeed a response from the authorities in the course of the second quarter, and as soon as that is received, we will be able to provide an update. So there is nothing I would say to be reported at this point in time, other that it follows its normal course. On the second point, I don't know where you inferred that we lost a diesel business to Johnson Matthey.
Not the whole business, just this particular contract.
Yeah, but I don't know how you could infer that. Because we never commented on that, nor did Johnson Matthey, nor any of our common customers.
They won some contracts. They commented in their full year, in their Q3 results.
I don't think so. And so, but that's your assumption. But basically, the fact is that the engine change, we know when it will take place, so it's not a matter of whether it will happen. We know that it happens, and we know when, and that's why I'm confident that it was only a one-year issue.
Okay.
And then the last question regarding the availability is actually, no, we don't see a reduced availability of residues coming from the smelting industry. So the availability of industrial residues continues to be fairly supportive. And the only issue that we have today is that we are capacity constrained, as we have been in the past, and continue to be selective. But we don't see significant changes in the availability patterns, I would say, except the temporary effects that I've commented earlier and which relate mostly to PGM-containing materials.
We now have a question from Neil Tyler from Redburn. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Couple of questions, please. Firstly, back to your guidance and the difference between what you've given in terms of quantification of the EBIT range today and what you said in February. Is that purely to do with the lower volumes in the recycling business, or are there other factors that have altered over the past 2 or 3 months? I wonder if you could, if there are other factors, if you could sort of list them, perhaps in order of magnitude. Secondly, staying on recycling, the unwinding of the hedging, or the, you know, the forward contracts that's still impacting the business. Can you give us some indication of whether you think that will have really sort of washed through, I suppose, given that you'll be selling forward far less at these current metals prices, you know, when we can sort of think about the earnings contribution from that business as a more stable base from which to forecast going forward, whether that will be the first half or second half of this year or further out still. Thank you.
Okay. Try to take both questions on the guidance. So the two factors basically that played and were situated in recycling is next to the volumes that we elaborated on is the mix effect. So I would say it's volume and mix, those two elements. It's certainly not metal prices, because as you've seen, certainly in euro terms, what happened between beginning of the year and today in terms of metal price evolution is not really material. I mean, we're talking, depending on what metal from
0 to maybe 5, maximum 10%, but the overall mix hasn't, I would say, changed to the positive. Also in terms of Forex, there has been no major improvement. So it's really focused indeed on recycling and focused on mix and volumes, mostly volumes. On the hedging, unfortunately, as you know, we don't give any specifics. What we can say is that we continue to have a number of hedges in place that are basically covering this year, 2014, and go into 2015. The annual report, you actually find a bit of an indication of what metals, so it's mostly precious metals and a bit of copper and a bit of palladium. So it's difficult to say whether it's first half, second half. I would say it's spread out over this year and into next year. And as we said before, it's clearly lower in terms of overall hedge book than what we had last year indeed.
Thank you very much.
We have now a question from Rakesh Patel for Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Just a couple of questions, if I may. First of all, just following up from Neil's question in terms of the hedge book, just so we can get an idea, all being equal, if metal prices were to stay where they are, and of course the planned shutdowns which run through into 2015 as well, would you expect recycling EBIT to be positive in 2015? And then secondly, I wondered if you could comment a little bit on the increased competitive pressure that you're seeing in the refining business as well, and how, if you expect that to ease over time. Thanks very much.
Rakesh, I mean, we're not going to comment on 2015. Suffice this early in the year to comment on what we see for 2014, and the competitive situation in the recycling and the refining business is largely unchanged compared to the previous discussions that we've had. The picture is basically the same, and so we continue to be very positive about the business prospects, and that's why we are focusing today on the expansion program such that we can capture a decent share of the growth of the market. But the competitive situation is by and large unchanged.
Yeah,
with the situation that we see in the PGM-rich materials, the PGM-containing materials, and I have mentioned already in the past on a number of occasions that the market for spent automotive catalysts had become very competitive because of an increased interest from a number of players, and the situation in South Africa has not improved the situation to the contrary, of course. So that's the only major change that we see for the time being in terms of competitive situation on the marketplace. Other than that, it is by and large the same as what we described last year.
That's helpful. Thanks very much.
We are now moving to Andrew Benson from Citi. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Andrew Benson here. Can you try and give a little sort of overview of what you think is going to be the long-term consequences from what's happening in South Africa? I mean, is there going to be a sort of structural reduction in if you like, recycling opportunity for you because of what's happening there? Can you, secondly, just give an idea of what you're trying to achieve in terms of the profit upside potential from the re-engineering in Hoboken and when that has a chance to come through? I mean, you're helping us by focusing on all the cost issues this year and next year, but what is it you're trying to achieve? What's the upside over the medium term? And thirdly, can you give up the assumptions that underpin the bottom and the top end of that range that you've indicated today, please?
Andrew, it's difficult for me to say what could happen in South Africa. Clearly, the situation is, as you know, extremely complicated, and I do not expect major changes or major solutions to emerge prior to the elections, which are due to take place next month. In the longer term, I believe that the world and the country will need to have a healthy PGM mining industry. So I would expect that structural changes will gradually be introduced in order to make this industry sustainable, and because the world needs PGMs for a number of applications that you can't do without, and for geological reasons, the PGM distribution is not even across regions and countries in the world. So the situation will have to be sorted out. I guess there is.
No, I can see that. I was just wondering if what is going on now leads to a reduction in opportunity for you.
No.
For recycle for you?
No, I see that only as a temporary effect and not as a structural reduction of the recycling opportunities. As we have indicated in the past, the fact that the ore bodies are getting increasingly complex means that the recycling work is more than ever necessary and complicated, and this is where we are extremely well positioned. So I don't think that trend is likely to change because of what we see today, of the factors that we see today affecting the market. I think that trend of increasing complexity, growing complexity of the ore bodies, and as a consequence, growing complexity of the residue streams is there to stay. Now, in terms of the Hoboken potential, you have to bear in mind, Andrew, that the whole idea behind this work is to expand capacity by 40%. So the benefits will start to accrue in 2016 when we're in a position to ramp up the expanded capacity. And so this will be, to a large extent, a volume-driven improvement story and growth story more than anything else. Of course, one of the reasons we decided as a primary choice to expand in Hoboken rather than to build a separate facility was also to create a further costs advantage through scale effects by increasing the capacity and using the existing infrastructure and site to do so. You can benefit from scale effects as you ramp up the volumes. And both the volume effects and the scale effects should start to accrue in 2016, start to accrue to the bottom line in 2016. In terms of what are the assumptions that behind the bottom and the high end of the range, I would say the main factors, swing factors that can explain the range are related to the volumes and the recycling volumes in particular, and because it remains to be seen, as I have indicated in the past, how the facility restarts and performs, at which smelting rate we can work once the maintenance shutdown has been completed and some of the modifications have been introduced in the summer months. So this is one of the swing factors. It's volumes. And the other swing factors is also the mix, because we have no certainty about the duration of what we see as likely temporary effects on the mix.
Thank you very much.
Other than that, we have assumed constant market conditions to prepare the forecast.
Okay, no, thanks very much. Appreciate that.
We are now taking a question from Christian Stiefel from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. I have actually three questions, two in recycling and one in catalysis. The first in recycling, could you please give us some explanation of why the availability of most complex e-scrap has deteriorated in the quarter? So what's driving this and what are your expectations moving forward? Also, maybe could you potentially quantify the impact of reduced capacity, please, in the quarter in terms of volumes? And then lastly, on catalysis, can you maybe help us better understand the impact you're going to see from Euro 6b legislation for light-duty diesel on your sales and profits, if possible? Thank you very much.
The e-scrap availability, that's probably a number of temporary effects, I would say, and possibly some spillover from the PGM situation that I talked to earlier. Difficult to analyze in detail. PGMs, because of some of these e-scrap streams contain palladium, so they can also form an attractive or I mean, their attractiveness may increase to people looking for PGMs at any price in the current circumstances. So that may be a reason, but I don't have a definite explanation for that. But I don't see any structural changes or contract changes that would lead me to be concerned about future availability and intake of such materials. On your second question, we're not prepared to quantify. We're not willing to quantify the impact of the downtime in terms of volume. Suffice to say, at this point in time, that this is a material effect, as you will have inferred from the earnings guidance, and indeed the comparison of this earnings guidance to the indications we gave back in February. And then, sorry, can you repeat your last question regarding Euro 6b?
Yes, indeed. Obviously, in H2 of this year, you were going to see the first benefits of your Euro 6b legislation for light-duty diesel. And I just wanted to get a better feel of what we can expect from this piece of legislation in terms of your sales or profits. I mean, obviously, in HDD, we know that at least in H2 of this year, you're going to make a sales contribution, but probably that's going to be a different picture on the EBIT line. So maybe a bit, a little bit more clarity with regard to Euro 6b light-duty diesel. Thank you.
Yeah, unlike in heavy-duty, as you were pointing out, where it's a brand-new business for us, where basically the whole system that we are delivering to our HDD customer is new business for us. In light duty, what the new legislation means is the addition of typically one catalyst, either a NOx trap or an SCR catalyst for light duty application. So the impact is a bit less brutal, I would say, than what you would see in heavy duty, but it is significant for us.
Okay, thank you very much.
And just to remind you, this is one of the reasons that led us to the investment decision a few years ago to add new dedicated production lines in Bad Säckingen in Germany to actually address that additional market for Euro 6.
Thank you.
We now have a question from Simon Fickling from Exxon. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Three questions, please. First couple are financial. Firstly, on use of cash, so net debt has reduced further in the quarter, and I think your buyback limit is 10%, so you're getting close to that. In the past, you've indicated I don't think there are any firm plans to cancel those shares. Can you just update us on that and on possible uses of those shares? and of the strong balance sheet. Linked to that as well, on the M&A front, there was a story a couple of days ago linking you to a certain asset. Obviously not expecting a specific comment on that, but just a slightly related question. Would you consider an equity issue if you found a asset or a business that you felt justified a place in your portfolio? And thirdly, more broadly on precious metals, so metal prices have stabilized slash slightly recovered so far in the year. I wonder if you had any view on what had prompted that, and then more longer term, if and how we might get back to the sort of attractive 2011-2012 levels, or perhaps whether those should now be viewed, or certainly for the midterm, as something of a bubble, and that those sort of that supportive backdrop is now quite a long way off. Thank you.
Okay, first the question on the treasury shares. So as you've seen in the press release, we're currently close to 11 million of own shares. So we have an authorization to go up to 10%, which is 12 million. So we have 1 million to go. We basically purchased back, when you look at 2014 so far, 36 million euros basically that we spent on buying back our shares. So we have 1 million to go, and there's no decision yet on what to do with the shares that we have bought back. So I would say the answer that that you know in terms of what could be the future users is basically either we do decide once we get to the full authorization level to indeed cancel them or to use them, for example, for an acquisition. That's those are, I would say, the two main options. The second question on M&A is, as you can predict, we obviously do not comment on any market rumors or anything that's in the press. You know, I think the fact that basically what we could be looking at in terms of M&A strategy, we've developed that, I think, together with you recently. It's about strengthening our existing businesses. That can be on a technology front. It can be on anything that basically gives us synergies. Catalysis, as you know, from a strategic perspective, is an area which is of interest. So basically, there's nothing new to say there. We have a pipeline of M&A projects on a continuous basis. There's things that are new, there's things that fall off as it happens, so really nothing to comment there. On the third question?
But there was a side question, on M&A, would we be ready to issue equity if an M&A project would justify or would require it? And I would say we've done that in the past, indeed, if we find an acquisition target that makes sense for Umicore and indeed that cannot be fully financed by the balance sheet, an equity raising could be on the agenda. The preference is clearly to use the balance sheet for acquisitions, as we have done mostly over time, I would say.
Yeah. And we have the ambition to remain investment grade, so that's a bit of guidance we have for ourselves. Yeah.
And on the precious metals, the last question.
And on the precious metals,
what was our view?
The view on long-term precious metals. Well, I think the view on the long-term, as you know, which because it's linked to our strategy, is that basically we're using more and more metals. That supply of metals is becoming more and more complex, what Mark already mentioned in terms of what's happening on the mining on the concentrate side. So I would say the long-term view for us as Umicore is indeed a positive view in terms of evolution of metal prices. Now, obviously, to make any statements on short or medium-term fluctuations is we don't know. We don't know, but so long term, basically the use of be it precious metals or specialty metals is increasing, and on the supply side things are getting more complex. So I think those two together should give us a long term positive outlook.
Okay, thank you.
We now have a question from Denis Lepadatu from Kempen. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Just to clarify a couple of things on recycling, I was wondering if you could give us some guidance on how we should look at the full year top line developments for the division versus the Q1 dynamics, and also if you can brief us a bit on the cost side, whether we should see an increase in cost in recycling related to the engineering and testing work being undertaken. Also, looking at the guidance and how that differs from consensus, it seems like we have to go for an average reduction of 30 million. And if I understand correctly, that would be mainly related to recycling, which is, in my case would imply that recycling would fall by another about 30% in 2014 in terms of EBIT. How should we look at 2015 and how can we put things into perspective? Is it 2014 really the bottom because we have the negative metal mix and volume trends? And are we really comfortable with the fact that these are all at bottom levels and we should see a relief in 2014?
Sorry, Denis, I missed the first question. I have your questions starting with the additional costs, but I missed the first one. Can you repeat it?
What is your assumption on top line for the full year, and how should that be? How should we extrapolate Q1 at all in terms of top line developments, or is it more of a cost effect that causes this kind of margin contraction again?
In recycling.
Yes.
Okay. Good. I would say the extrapolating is difficult at this stage, and that's why we have the range in the earnings guidance. And as I mentioned earlier, the difference between the low end of the range and the higher end of the range as we see it today has to a large extent to do with the uncertainty around volumes. So that's what I could. That's the only thing I can say about extrapolating from the first quarter. This being said, clearly there will be and there are additional costs, engineering costs and testing costs, as we engaged into the preparatory phase for the expansion. And this is also factored in the forecast that. We have published today. So it's a matter of volumes, but there with a degree of uncertainty which leads to a certain range, and additional costs are part of the picture. And I think it is fair to assume that the difference in earnings guidance compared to what the consensus of the market was prior to this morning's release has entirely to do with recycling. I think that's a safe and fair assumption. Now, difficult to comment today or too early to comment on 2015. Suffice to say that indeed I would see 2014 as a bottom year with a conjunction of unfavorable factors in terms of volumes, mix, additional costs, etc., and that I would expect all in all improvements to be visible in a significant manner in 2015.
Okay, that's clear. And maybe one more, just from a structural perspective, what do you think are the main changes in the profitability of the various supply streams? I mean, because it kind of feels like there's a structural downtrend across the board in all the streams. Is it something which is actually structurally happening besides automotive catalysts as well, or is it mainly related to lower precious and specialty metal prices?
It is the latter. It is mostly an effect of lower metal prices, indeed. In certain activities like in our jewelry and industrial metals business unit, the lower metal prices have also an induced effect on the availability of certain industrial and jewelry scrap in particular. But by and large, I would say it's a metal price driven effect.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
We are now moving to Junior Quignil from Petercam. Please go ahead.
Hi. Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my questions. Actually, most of them have been answered. I could ask a question on the maybe on the CapEx. You said there's clearly more work in the recycling division, and that you underestimated maybe the volume impact from the downtime. Does that also mean that we could see more CapEx going forward? I mean, could the 2014 or 2015 CapEx exceed the 2013 one? Yep, that's it. Thanks.
Yes, so no, what's basically the effects we're seeing in Hoboken are really cost effects. So it's not like we are facing an increase in the capex requirements. So it's really an effect on the cost and on the operation of the installation. In general, in terms of capex, we can basically repeat what we I think indicated before, is that this year should be lower in terms of capex certainly than last year, and you know specifically for Hoboken that we've given the guidance for the 100 million to basically spread it over 2 years, 2014-2015, and as Mark mentioned, we try to do a lot of things up front, so this year, so I would say the guidance is probably still at this stage 50-50 this year, next year for Hoboken specifically.
All right, that's pretty clear. Maybe one small follow-up. I don't know if I may ask, but whether there's already a destination of the treasury shares. We're close to the target. I would say at today's run rate, we'll be reaching the targets in a couple of months. Still no update there.
No, so as I mentioned, we still have a million to go, and so no decision yet on the existing shares. No.
All right, thanks. Very clear.
The next question comes from Joe Dewhurst from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi. So yeah, just one question really left. Just on the guidance. Just to be clear, so essentially you've assumed that the South African risk, or at least the South African industrial action, continues the whole year in that guidance. Is that, just to be clear on that?
No, not really. There are actually there is a certain degree of variability in the assumptions, and this is part of the explanation behind the range.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And now we have a question from Edward Donnelly from One Invest. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. A couple of questions, if I may. I'm just trying to get a better understanding of the comfort you have with regard to the cost dynamic, with regard to what's going on in the refining section. Because if you go back to the transcript back in February, the last call, there you were saying, in reference to a question, that you know, the development costs last year and engineering costs last year, a lot of the peripheral investments were done in the course of that year, and the difference between the two periods would be related primarily to metals prices, because basically a lot of the engineering work and costs had been taken in 2013, which would set you up for the debottlenecking in 14. So I'm trying to understand a little bit why we are now end of April, and we're seeing a situation which wasn't obviously visible back in the end of, in the beginning of February. So what's the comfort factor that you won't have further step up either in costs, back to a previous question, or the fact that volumes will actually be further impacted due to disturbances?
Well, there are a number of things that you figure out as you go, and as we're making modifications, we are in a position to fine tune the engineering work and some of the testing work as well. So there is a part of the costs and the impact in terms of downtime is something that was figured out recently, indeed. I mean, it's a highly complex process, and we model as much as we can in lab experiments, and then we try to pilot as much as we can during normal operations time. But at one point in time, you also need to really make a move and go to the new concept, implement it, test it, and there are a number of adjustments that that need to be made. This is highly complicated engineering, and let's face it. I mean, today we see only the downside of that, which is a lower availability and higher cost. But in reality, if you look at it over the long term, what it means is that we have the ability to engineer things that are very complicated to do, and this is part of our competitive advantage in the long run.
And the other one I just wanted a better understanding of was the if you look at this greater downtime than you were anticipating, and a certain degree of unpredictability from your side, which I totally sympathize with, but how do you actually match that with contract obligations? Because you obviously have clients who want a certain amount of volume processed. And how are you actually handling that? And are you seeing a mix change in the volumes coming through as well? And if you look forward at the volume or contractual obligations or commitments you've got, do we see anything changing within the mix element going forward on that as well?
Let me start with the mix. No, other than the temporary mix effects that I've mentioned earlier, I don't see any other impact. And in terms of contractual obligations, one has to bear in mind that we work with a number of long-term contracts or annual contracts, and we also resort to the spot market to complement these contracted volumes. So we have a little bit of flexibility and buffer we can use on the spot market.
Okay.
So our contractual obligations are not going to be compromised by what I described earlier. They can be fully met.
Okay. I did say I had a couple of questions. I apologize. I can't count, so two more. Could you just give an idea what your Brazilian exposure is? Because it's a geography you referenced several times going through the press release today, and just have an understanding of how important Brazil is for you, especially on the auto side.
Yeah, I would say I would not want to single out the auto side of it, but overall, if you look at the revenues of Umicore, it is north of 5%, so it is pretty significant for one single country, and it's profitable business.
Right. And the okay, that actually covers it, to be honest. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We now have a question from Laurent Favre from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, and thanks for taking two questions on energy materials. The first one is a quick one. Palm Commodities that you consolidated from end of last year, can you tell us what was the impact on the plus 26% in Q1 sales? I'm thinking around 5%, but any clarification would be good. And the second one is on rechargeable batteries, where you're mentioning that Q1 was unseasonally unusually strong, and you're mentioning also 4G and mobile phones. I mean, I think this year we have some big product launches which have been a bit earlier than usual. Do you think that there is some lumpiness in that business? Or should we assume that the Q1 strength is going to be seen again in for the rest of the year? Thank you.
Yes, on Palm Commodities, so you can say that the like-for-like revenue growth for energy materials was something like 20%. So we give the 26%, so about 20% is really like-for-like. So you were very close in your estimate. I would also like to add that that the unit is performing according to plan and is doing very well. On RBM, indeed, the first quarter, as you know, typically the first quarter for rechargeable battery materials is a bit of a slower quarter for seasonality reasons. We didn't see that this year. It's hard to extrapolate, I think, indeed. There may be a temporary effect that we had in the first quarter that we may see a bit lower volumes going forward. I think certainly to extrapolate the first quarter for the full year is not something we would like to do. It's suffice to say that in general, in electronics, we're currently seeing a lot of strong demand for those products and so also for our products, but indeed not to be extrapolated for the full year.
Thank you.
We are now moving to Oliver Reis from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Most of my questions have already been answered. I just have one more. Could you clarify, do you feel confident that 2014 is a bottom year for recycling as well as the group, given it sounds like there remains some risk of capacity constraints in 2015? That's holding all mix constant for 2015.
Yes, I do feel confident about both cases, Oliver.
Okay, thanks. Could you maybe go into a bit more detail on exactly how the capacity expansion will work through the year and the greater intensity of work that will have to be done on the smelter in advance of the capacity expansion?
Well, you mean this year, I guess.
Next year.
Next year. No, again, it is premature to comment on that. We're at the preparatory stage now. We have still to go through a fairly significant phase of modifications and investments during the shutdown that will take place in a couple of months' time. So I think it's no, indeed, it's too early to comment on that.
Okay, thanks very much.
We have another question from Mutlu Gundogan from ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yeah, two follow-up questions left. First on energy materials. If you look back at the last couple of periods, we saw also high growth in energy materials, but not really leading to higher profits. I mean, is that still a trend this year, or do you see that this year the higher growth is translating into higher earnings as well? And then secondly, coming back to recycling, I mean, we spoke a lot about the volumes, but can you talk a little bit about capacity? Because in the second half of 2013, it seemed that your capacity was up, and also at the full year results, I think you were thinking that the increased capacity in 2014 might also lead to higher volumes. So can you confirm that capacity is up for the year? And perhaps, I know maybe it's too early, but perhaps your thoughts on capacity in 2015, how do you see that evolving? Thank you.
Yeah, so on energy materials, I mean, if you look at the growth rates that we show in terms of top line growth, I mean the 20% plus, indeed, it means that you do get additional contribution, especially when you reinforce it basically with the cost measures that we've taken over the last year. So that's why we indeed see a substantial, I would say, increase in profitability for the. For the unit in general, I mean, what we have been guiding towards end of last year, beginning of this year. Now, obviously, you have to be a bit careful because it's also a unit where we have a lot of investments, especially in RBM. And you know, as we continue to invest, we have higher depreciation costs. So that's a factor that plays a role when you look at REBIT. And the second thing is, as you know, that in quite a number of the markets for energy materials, it's a competitive market. So in terms of pricing pressure, that is still the case. But overall, when you look at the growth rates that we have, indeed, we have a substantial increase in profitability overall versus what we've seen certainly in the last years.
And regarding your second question, Mutlu, again, I think it's too early to comment on capacity developments going into 2015.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
We now have a question from Wim Hoste from KBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions from my side. First on catalysis. Could you, you seem to indicate that the ramp-ups of the AGD lines are according to plan. Does that mean we should assume that you reach a break-even in AGD in the second half and then be profitable next year on a full-year basis? That's the first question. Second one on rechargeable battery materials. The press release mentions somewhat erratic order patterns in for the automotive applications. Could you maybe explain what the underlying trends is for you? Is there still a lot of the contracts you have secured for models that have to be launched, or and what would be the time frame for those launches? So basically, how fast will the ramp up, further ramp up in the automotive related RBM business be? Thank you.
Okay, so you're right about HDD. The ramp-up will gradually have an effect and starting mostly in the second half of this year. This being said, I don't want to go into break-even kind of considerations or comments. Suffice to say that the top line and bottom line contributions will start to be visible and material in the second part of this year indeed, and more so going into next year. On the automotive demand for battery materials, we have quite a number of platforms that should hit the roads in 2015-2016, so that should give an idea about the further ramp-up of that business. Now, of course, difficult to translate that into volume guidance because it remains to be seen how these models will sell in the marketplace, of course. And you may expect for the coming periods, the coming quarters, some further erratic ordering patterns. I don't see reasons for the automotive industry or the battery industry to move into, I would say, a more linear mode of operation in the very short term. It will probably take a longer while before we get there.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Our last question comes from Edward Donnelly from One Invest. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Sorry, back again. Just with regard to, again, on recycling, it goes back to your comment in the press release talking about the overall intake of e-scrap increase, the availability of the most complex e-scrap materials fell somewhat. Can you just, because, again, I'm sorry to reference this, but you know, back on the the call back in February, one of the positions you were talking about was this, you know, this, the strength you actually had in the high-end e-scrap. And the sort of the defendability of that, and therefore the deliverance on that particular stream. So I'm wondering again, what has possibly happened within a relatively short period of time that you're now sort of highlighting that the high end has become less available? That's one. And then the other one is reference back to Brazil. Does Brazil, and I don't know if you break out geographies on a separate margin level, but does Brazil carry a higher profitability than group average?
On the first element, Edward, I would like to first of all emphasize the fact that we wrote somewhat lower availability, so it indicates that it's not a very significant movement. Now, the issue is that we're commenting on quarterly movements, and which, with all due respect, are not always extremely relevant. Do not necessarily give indications of directions or of structural changes in the marketplace. So I would say there this is a short-term temporary effect. Most likely there is nothing behind it that would indicate otherwise. That's all I can say. And again, I would be far more happy if I could comment on the longer-term evolution of this type of supply stream than the quarterly evolution. I think it would probably be somewhat more meaningful to indicate where the trends are really going. So again, nothing that indicates that this is not a temporary effect.
Okay, I mean, I don't want to be sort of pedantic, but why would you then particularly highlight that issue? And that it's not, and it's not a risk that it actually becomes the beginning of a trend. So what would have impacted now that would allow you to reverse that statement basically for the rest of the year?
No, it's for the sake of completeness, because we have traditionally commented on one side on the industrial residues, on the other side when it comes to our comments on the end-of-life products. We have systematically given comments about the evolution in e-scrap, in spent autocats, and in spent petrochemical catalysts. And we have just stuck to that practice of trying to be complete and addressing all the other segments. But you're right, indeed, this may be unduly then may then be unduly extrapolated. Now, of course, if we comment every quarter about these segments and then we stop commenting about one of them, this may also be misinterpreted or extrapolated in the wrong manner. So it's a bit of a dilemma, and the reality is that I don't have a firm answer to give you, again, except that there is no indication of any structural change.
Okay, I appreciate that. And then the other one was on Brazil.
On Brazil. I'm not going to give you details about the relative profitability of these operations compared to the group. These are profitable operations.
Right. But just bearing in mind that you know you have invested in Brazil and you built up the footprint there, is there and I'm not wanting to put words into your mouth at all, but is there any risk of underutilization developing there? Because the Brazilian situation seems to be unwinding relatively faster than a number of businesses seem to be anticipating.
I don't see that. I don't see signs of moving into a structural underutilization of our asset base in Brazil. I would say that when it comes to capacity, we have probably invested less in Brazil in the past 5 years than in other growth regions. So I'm comparing emerging markets to other emerging markets now. And so I don't see a major of moving into structural underutilization of the asset base.
Okay, great. And I really appreciate all the answers and the detail. Thanks a lot.
Okay, so at this point in time, then I would like to thank you for participating in this conference call. And as usual, our investor relations team will be available to take your follow-on questions and address them as promptly as possible. And of course, we'll have occasions in the coming weeks to continue this discussion. Thank you, and have a nice rest of the day. Bye-bye.